In Real Ghost Stories, published by the Review of Reviews, English, a correspondent tells of having seen a woman in a field vanish. Like others who have had this experience, he does not say that he saw a woman vanish, but that he saw a figure of a woman vanish. He inquired for some occurrence by which to explain, and learned that somewhere in the neighborhood a woman had been murdered, and that her figure had haunted the place. In the PROCSPR, 10-98, someone tells of having walked, with her father, upon a sandy place, near Aldershot, hearing footsteps, turning, seeing a soldier. The footsteps suddenly ceased to be heard. She turned again to look. The soldier had vanished. This correspondent writes that her father never would believe anything except that it was a real soldier, who somehow got away. In the Occult Review, 23-168, a correspondent writes that, while walking in a street in Twickenham, he saw, walking toward him, a figure of a man. The figure turned and vanished, or disappeared through a garden wall. This correspondent failed to learn of a murder that had been committed in the neighborhood, but, influenced by the familiar convention, mentions that there was an old dueling ground nearby. The most circumstantial of the stories appears in the Jour SPR, November, 1893. Miss M. Scott writes that, upon the afternoon of the 7th of May, 1893, between 5 and 6 o'clock, she was walking upon a road, near St. Boswell's, Roxburghshire, when she saw ahead of her a tall man, who, dressed in black, looked like a clergyman. There is no assertion that this figure looked ghostly, and there is a little circumstance that indicates that the figure, or the living being, was looked at more than casually. Having considerable distance to go, Miss Scott started to run, but it occurred to her that it would not be dignified to run past this stranger, so she stood still, to let the distance increase. She saw the clerical-looking man turn a corner of the road, the upper part of his body visible above a low hedge. He was gone in an instant. Not far beyond this vanishing point, Miss Scott met her sister, who was standing in the road, looking about her in bewilderment, exclaiming that she had seen a man disappear, while she was looking at him. One of our present thoughts is that teleportations, back and forth, often occur. There are many records, some of which may not be yarns, or may not be altogether yarns, of persons who have been seen far from where, so far as those persons, themselves, knew, they were, at the time. See instances in Gurney's Phantasms of the Living. The idea is that human beings have been switched away somewhere, and soon switched back, and have been seen, away somewhere, and have been explained to the perceivers, as their own hallucinations. It may be that I can record a case of a man who was about to disappear, but was dragged back, in time, from a disappearing point. I think of the children of Clavaus, who were about to be taken into a vortex, but were dragged back by their parents, who were not susceptible. Data look as if there may have been a transporting current through so-called solid substance, which opened and then closed, with no sign of a yawning. It may be that what we call substance is as much open as closed. I accept, myself, that there is only relative substance, so far as the phenomenal is concerned, so I can't take much interest in what the physicists are doing, trying to find out what mere phenomenal substance really, or finally, is. It isn't, or it is intermediate to existence and non-existence. If there is an organic existence that is more than relative, though not absolute, it may be the substantial, but its iron and lead, and gold are only phenomenal. The greatest seeming security is only a temporary disguise of the abysmal. All of us are skating over thin existence. Early in the morning of December 9, 1873, Thomas B. Cumpston and his wife, who occupied good positions in Leeds, were arrested in a railroad station, in Bristol, England, charged with disorderly conduct, both of them in their night clothes, Cumpston having fired a pistol. See the London Times, December 11, 1873. Cumpston excitedly told that he and his wife had arrived the day before, from Leeds, and had taken a room in a Bristol hotel, and that, early in the morning, the floor had opened, and that, as he was about to be dragged into the opening, his wife had saved him, both of them so terrified that they had jumped out the window, running to the railroad station, looking for a policeman. In the Bristol Daily Post, December 10, is an account of proceedings in the police court. Cumpston's excitement was still so intense that he could not clearly express himself. Mrs. Cumpston testified that, early in the evening, both of them had been alarmed by loud sounds, but that they had been reassured by the landlady. At 3 or 4 in the morning the sounds were heard again. They jumped out on the floor, which was felt giving away under them. Voices repeating their exclamations were heard, or their own voices echoed strangely. Then, according to what she saw, or thought she saw, the floor opened wide. Her husband was falling into this opening when she dragged him back. The landlady was called, and she testified that sounds had been heard, but she was unable clearly to describe them. Policemen said that they had gone to the place, the Victoria Hotel, and had examined the room, finding nothing to justify the extraordinary conduct of the Cumpstons. They suggested that the matter was a case of collective hallucination. I note that there was no suggestion of intoxication. The Cumpstons, an elderly couple, were discharged in the custody of somebody who had come from Leeds. Collective hallucination is another of the dismissal labels by which conventionalists shirk thinking. Here is another illustration of the lack of standards, in phenomenal existence, by which to judge anything. One man's story, if not to the liking of conventionalists, is not accepted, because it is not supported, and then testimony by more than one is not accepted, if undesirable, because that is collective hallucination. In this kind of jurisprudence, there is no hope for any kind of testimony against the beliefs in which conventional scientists agree. Among their amusing disregards is that of overlooking that, quite as truly may their own agreements be collective delusions. The loud sounds in the Cumpston case suggest something of correlation with poltergeist phenomena. Spiritualists have persistently called poltergeist sounds raps. Sometimes they are raps, but often they are detonations that shake buildings. People up and down a street have been kept awake by them. Maybe existences open and shut noisily. From my own experience, I don't know that there ever has been a poltergeist. At least, I have had only one experience, and that is explainable several ways. But what would be the use of writing a book about things that we think we're sure of, unless, like a good deal in this book, to show the deuce we are? In the Sunday Express, London, December 5, 1926, Lieutenant Colonel Foley tells of an occurrence that resembles the Cumpston's experience. A room in Corpus Christi College, Cambridge University, was, in October, 1904, said to be haunted. Four students, of whom Shane Leslie, the writer, was one, investigated. Largely the story is of an invisible, but tangible, thing, or being, which sometimes became dimly visible, inhabiting, or visiting, this room. The four students went into the room, and one of them was dragged away from the others. His companions grabbed him. Like some powerful magnet, something was drawing him out of their grasp. They pulled against it, and fought in a frenzy, and they won the tug. Other students, outside the room, were shouting. Undergraduates came running down the stairs, and, crowding into the room, wrecked it, even tearing out the oak paneling. Appended to the story, in the Sunday Express, is a statement by Mr. Leslie. Colonel Foley has given an accurate account of the occurrence. 19. In the Encyclopaedia Britannica, the story of Caspar Hauser is said to be one of the most baffling mysteries in history. This is an unusual statement. Mostly we meet denials that there are mysteries. In everything that I have read upon this case, it is treated as if it were unique. A writer like Andrew Lang, who has a liking for mysteries, takes up such a case, with not an indication of a thought in his mind that it should not be studied as a thing in itself, but should be correlated with similars. That, inductively, anything of an ultimate nature could be found out, is no delusion of mine, I think not of a widening of truth, but of a lessening of error. I am naive enough in my own ways, but I have not the youthful hopes of John Stuart Mill and Francis Bacon. As to one of the most mysterious of the circumstances in the story of Caspar Hauser, I have many records of attacks upon human beings, by means of an unknown, missile-less weapons. See the newspapers for several dozen accounts of somebody, or something, that was terrorizing people in New Jersey, in and around Camden, in the winter of 1927-28. People were fired upon, and in automobiles there were bullet holes, but bullets were unfindable. I know of two other instances, in the state of New Jersey. In France, about the year 1910, there was a long series of such attacks, attributed to phantom bandits. It may be that, telepathically, human beings have been induced to commit suicide. Look up the drowning of Frank Podmar. It may be that the mystery of Caspar Hauser was attracting too much attention. There is a strange similarity in the taking off of Frank Podmar, Houdini, Washington Irving Bishop, and perhaps Dr. Crawford. The list is long, of the deaths that followed the opening of the tomb of Tutankhamen.